This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays. With a refreshing strawberry lemonade twist, it's Natterdays.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed a dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back, a College World Series title. Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
We're trying to figure out, or I guess Tommy has figured out, but about the printer, because we have a rundown that we do with all of our show prep that ends up showing it, and I guess me and Ty are behind the times when it comes to how things print, because we never use printers.
We have a very sophisticated networking system in this building.
Very much so.
Huh? Yeah. Well, one end of the building, which is our production / on-air, and is on one wired completely different, because we don't want the yahoos and sales, you know, sitting down there looking at stuff on the internet.
I'd say careful where you go with that.
Infecting our computers over here. So we have both the two ends of our building, administration and sales, is on one network, completely wired different than the on-air side. It's completely isolated. So the printers and stuff, the network printers are different. So there's a problem with one of the network printers on this end of the building, and now we're trying to use the other network printer, and it's creating problems for Ty this morning.
Yeah, and I'm sitting here, and I'm trying to install the driver, as you right. say, because apparently you just can't go on and print something over Wi-Fi. You have to actually download the driver. But this, see, here's the thing. It's like, I feel like printing is starting to become like writing checks, and where who prints off things anymore? Like, I never print anything. And if I do, it's just because Betty or you ask me to.
Well, you print the rundown.
Well, Ty prints the
somebody
rundown.
Does.
Yeah, Ty prints the rundown. But I guarantee you that's probably one of the only few things that Ty prints in his life.
But Captain Millennial over here asked me if
Captain
I have this.
Captain Millennial.
Well, do you have the CD for it?
Yeah, now that was something.
The CD.
And that's where you go CD.
Let me go get the floppy disk out, and I'll bring you the floppy disk in here.
When was the last time you installed something with a CD?
Audition.
Yeah, I know. And what version is that?
Yeah.
Early.
Yeah,
but
early. That's like 2003.
Yeah. That's where you go into, no, you don't use the CD. You use the drive automatically. There's no, because the conversation ended right there. No one else told me anything else.
Well, we're working here on the Morning Rush to make sure this problem gets solved and that me and Ty are going to be able to print things over the Wi-Fi to our other printer, just in case these crises pop up again.
You know what I do want to figure out? I don't have it. How do you print from your iPhone? I don't have that figured out yet.
I know that you can do it on
some people
specific
do it.
Printers.
You have an app. You got to have it. I think ours will do it if you got it figured out. I'm not smart. I hadn't figured that part out. Now, that would be neat.
Yeah.
Well, that would be cool.
Like I said, I know you can, and I think it depends on how the printer is set up and all of that. So, yeah, I'm sure. But, again, that'd be cool, but I don't print anything, so wouldn't even know what to go along with it. So here on the Morning Rush this morning, we're figuring out some technologies. You know, we figure out how to make radio and broadcast our voices across the entire world, because that's how far our reach is, of course.
I gotta go get the floppy disk so Ty can put the driver on his computer.
No floppy disk, man. We're going way back. They even make computers with floppy disk anymore? I don't even think they get it added into. I think that time is gone. So
I don't even think they make computers with... I think you have to specially order and request a CD drive.
Yeah, I think you do too, because sometimes they'll have like a Blu-ray CD drive, whatever. But you know that, the time of CDs and floppy disk and installing
CD players
things
aren't even coming in cars in a lot of cases now.
No, in fact, it's funny because Nick Mason always made the joke that in his one of his vehicles, one of his many vehicles,
he does have many.
He doesn't have AM radio. He has FM radio, but doesn't have AM
radio.
Now,
I've never seen a radio that didn't have both bands.
See, I haven't either, but he claims.
I don't believe him. I'm calling BS on that.
Well, now, what is it about Nick Mason that you would think that he's not telling the truth?
Because I think it's there. He just doesn't know how to operate it.
Yeah. Well, now, that may be the case. I'm not saying one way
or
another.
Have you ever seen a radio that only had other than like maybe a Walkman or some kind of device of that? Have you ever seen a one in a car?
No.
That only had the FM band?
No, I haven't. Neither. I haven't personally. But thankfully, they don't make cars that way, Tommy. Thankfully, that people can hear our voices, whether it's through an AM station or an FM station. So as long as they keep making cars with that,
more and more people listening to this fine radio product.
The finest.
Over the streaming internet.
Yeah,
anymore.
Yeah, and then you know that's another. By the way, you know, I know we're kind of just since we're on this topic of
since we're heavy into sports already.
Yeah, since we're really diving in deep here.
I mean,
how do we get our when our show is on the air when people are tuning in and they have it in their cars or whatnot to where our show title like comes up on the stations? You know, when it'll say like, oh, you know how you when well, you listen to a certain station, you'll say a song or whatever.
Well, it does on depends. That's a station to station. Technology, I don't want to get deep in the weeds, but that is a per station deal. On some of our stations, it's set up that way. On others across the network, it is not.
Okay.
So,
well, of course, I have never just been in the car listening to.
There is a piece of equipment right in the rack behind you that handles it for here. Now, it does not say John Neighbors when it comes up. That would take a new piece of equipment.
What does it say? Does it say Morning Rush?
Well, it says Tommy Kraft.
Oh, Tommy Kraft. Yeah. Okay, well then, as long as it says that, then we're fine then. We're all fine.
I don't think it says that.
As long as it says something. Yeah, it just, you know.
It just says Ty Richardson.
It's, yeah, Ty Richardson. Yep. Dedicated to it and on this show. So, but yeah, so we're off to a roaring start here.
Yeah.
Here on
Hopefully
the show.
Somebody's left out there.
Yeah, when we're talking about printers and and radio yeah. technologies. Yeah. I mean, really riveting stuff yeah. here early on the morning yep. rush. But we are going to get into some.
We promise.
Yeah, some really interesting conversation, mainly dealing with Hunter Yurecek.
I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting to us.
Probably not why you pay your subscription.
No, I wouldn't think so. But, you know, yesterday we were able to catch up with Hunter Yurecek, the athletic director from the University of Arkansas. Mm-hmm. And he came on the show around 8:30, 8:35. So since the show ends at 9 o'clock, we didn't really have much of an opportunity to react to some of the comments that he made, at least really in general. So we have some clips that we're going to play back from that because I think there was a lot of fascinating things that he brought up, specifically when it comes to the renovations that are in plan for the Bud Walton Arena here in the next 3 to 5 years, how big of a football season this is upcoming, not only just for Chad Morris and the success, but also for the season ticket perspective. And also the question that you asked him, Tommy, about misconceptions of this coaching search that he just went through with Eric Musselman. And how he didn't take a shot at anybody specifically, but you could tell he's like, well, you know, when somebody that's the power of social media, somebody just puts a name out there and people run with it. And then it starts getting blown up into this big thing. And there were some names that got thrown out there that we didn't even contact, weren't even interested in. So he had a lot of interesting comments dealing with that. And I think that, you know, where he's at as far as the coaches go across the board at the University of Arkansas, I think they all feel they're very confident and they're in a good place. Now it's just going to come down to, you know, who needs the renovations? It always seems like somebody needs a renovation. Some sport needs some help, needs a new practice facility, needs to upgrade the facilities, the where they play at, whatever it may be. And it seems like Bud Walton Arena, of course, is going to be the big one that's on the list here in 3 to 5 years.
3 to 5 years. I mean, immediately there's a $20 million baseball complex, clubhouse, performance center, whatever they're going to end up. I think they have a title worked out for it, but you know, this deal down the right field line, well, out past the right field fence, that's going to be built. So that's the big one going on right now. Track and field, I think he said about a $10 million investment going to be made there. And then he did say 3 to 5 years from now, some renovations done to Bud Walton Arena. So we're talking about completing those or somewhere in the range of its 30-year anniversary of the arena. So not immediate plans. In fact, I'm sure they got ideas of the things they want to do, but I don't know that anything's been formally revealed or on the drawing board of here's the things that we think need to be done.
Yeah. In fact, the comment about the Bud Walton getting those renovations in 3 to 5 years got a lot of traffic yesterday from the show, just because people were wondering, okay, so what is the big renovation?
What are the needs?
Yeah, what are the needs? Because, yeah. I mean, that Bud Walton's one of those few facilities that we've talked about, maybe alongside with Baum Stadium, where it just seems like it's such a nice place to have. It's really held up. I know that Bud Walton is a little older than what Baum Stadium is, but it's just, it seems like it's like when you look at, okay, so what could this stadium need or this arena need? What needs to be something that they could approach? And I mean, I'm biased to it, but I feel like the student section could move, but that's neither here nor there. That's not what's going to be able to make money.
Move to where?
To where you can actually see them on television.
Also, move all the people that pay the money out of their seats.
Yeah, and give it to the students that pay the tuition.
Students don't pay tuition. Their parents pay tuition.
I guess if the millennial way, then yes. But, okay, you know, student loans, Tommy. Student loans. Okay. Yeah, I remember that. But, you know, maybe we'll get free college all one day. But anyways, that's neither here nor there.
It's about being seen on TV.
Yeah. It's like Warren's proposal yesterday, right?
Yeah, well, we don't need to go down that road just yet. But yeah, that's the thing is, like, I feel like there could be little adjustments here and there.
Let's not waste time, though, proposing that. So that's, no, that's a non-starter.
That's why I just was like saying it more tongue-in-cheek. Just right. Like, that's what I would want, but that's not what the university needs to have as their number one priority.
That's what you want until you can get season tickets in some of those seats that you want students to have.
So. Well, yeah, but I mean, in every other arena, and in most other arenas, the students are down there. I mean, in a lot of these other big schools.
Most? I wouldn't say most.
Oh, well, may not notice, but a good amount of them. So, I mean, they may.
Duke, okay, at Duke, they do it that way.
Yeah, but at Duke and even a place like Florida, I know that their student section's going courtside, too. So, but, I mean, there's places like that. And that's, again, I know that that's not realistic. That's probably not going to happen. It's probably number 182nd or 187 right on their list. So, I don't really need to worry about that, but I do believe that there are some things that they could do to adjust it and some things that they could add or that they could change to make it, you know, just a little more enjoyable.
When you talk renovations anymore, you know, people think about knocking down walls and these total conceptual and structural changes. I don't think that's what we're going to see at all. Mm-mm. But Walton, anymore, you need to think about when you're talking about renovations and upgrades and think technology. That's the big one anymore. What kind of new technology are you going to be putting into a facility? Internet. Everything's powered by internet anymore. And that's the thing. Devices, whether it's, you know, making the concession stands run faster, the ticket scans more efficient. We talked about that with him too. We'll get back to that. Making it, you know, every process and function throughout the arena easier on the people that use it every day, the media that uses it on game days, the, you know, just every, the fans that fill the stands. We talk about technology. There's more and more arenas that are going that have screens in certain sections where you can keep up with scores and highlights and stuff right there at your seat, because they're going to put a little wired LED screen in at your seat that you can, you know, make options and selections on things you want to see. Those are the kind of, I think, upgrades in an arena that's still of the quality of Bud Walton Arena that I think fans will appreciate. Hey, in these sections, you can upgrade your seat location, pay a little extra to get this device in front of you where you can catch game highlights and scores from around the league and the country. I think in football, if you could figure out a way to do that, that'd be golden.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's one of the reasons I don't enjoy going to as many football games as I used to. Why? Because all the other games are on TV. They're all in high def. They're coming in 4K. And I want to watch them all. I don't want to watch just one. If you go to one game in person, you're missing all the others. And I don't have time the rest of the weekend to go back. And I don't want to see just highlights. We'll see other games.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one thing that would lure more fans in. I don't Absolutely. Think basketball that's as big a deal, but I think that's one of the technologies. When you talk about renovations, it's also about technology.
That's right.
It's about having that screen also that shows not just highlights and scores. Oh, but there's a tab over here to order drinks. And they and a concierge will bring me popcorn, hot dog, and hopefully a Coca-Cola someday.
Or a beer.
Well, maybe. You know. But people enjoy service. Now, if you're sitting down on Gucci Row, you can get service. You're up in your skybox, you know, the world is your oasis. But if you're in section whatever, 117.
On a metal bleacher.
You know, and I'm not saying you do this for all 19,200 seats, but I'm saying there could be sections where these services are available.
Yeah.
I think those are the kind of things fans want and enjoy.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, a light lager brewed with a phenomenal strawberry lemonade flavor that's perfect for bringing the fun to every occasion. The new Natural Light Natterdays.
Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
In case you're just joining us, we're referring a lot to the interview we had yesterday with the athletic director of the University of Arkansas, Hunter Yurecek, and some of the comments that he had made specifically about the football team and the football season upcoming. And I thought it was really fascinating what he had to say, not only about from the fan perspective, but about season tickets as well.
You know, this is a key football season for us. I think we have four very winnable non-conference games We think we can find a way to win two or three more games, and if we can get to a bowl game this year, and then we have a robust conference schedule in 2020 where we have four SEC home games for the first time ever here at Donald Reynolds Razorback Stadium. And then in 2021, we have the Texas Longhorns coming here as an anchor game. And then we go back in 2022. So this is a year we're going to be building it. I know that people have been critical of our home schedule, and people are trying to decide, you know, do I really want to retain my season tickets? Well, look, this is a year to retain them, because after this year, we've got a schedule that's very significant in 20 and 21 and 22. And if you give them up this year because you're not excited about this team or not excited about the schedule, you're going to be left out in future years.
So that's what I thought was really interesting when you ran off the schedule itself and how this year, I mean, we've talked about it. And when it was released that Arkansas was only going to have two SEC games in Fayetteville this season, there was a lot of fans that were really upset. And one of the reasons why, and one of the topics that we had talking about, was if you're a season ticket holder that has to donate all this money and has to pay all this money for a season ticket, and the best game you get or best games is Auburn and Mississippi State, and that's it. Like, those are the only games that you will get in Fayetteville. You can understand why a lot of people are upset. But what Hunter Yurcheck is saying is, hey, yeah, it's going to suck this year as far as home schedules go. Yeah, it's going to happen. But here in the coming years, it's going to set up greatly for a schedule. You're going to have Texas coming to town in 2021. You're going to have teams like Georgia and Florida upcoming on the schedule in Fayetteville. And then, when he said that, Tommy, I had to double check and make sure that he was correct when he said that you're going to have the first time ever having four SEC games in Fayetteville
right
next season. So, you know, that was something that I was, or I guess, well, not next season, or what is it next season? It's the season after?
No, next season.
It is next season. Okay. Yeah, because I was having to think about that. But anyways, like, it's amazing that how long Arkansas has been in this conference, and just the way that schedules have set up, that's going to be the first time ever. So, you know, that'll be something worth it in the coming years.
You've always played, well, you've had the A&M game, which has obviously been down in Arlington, other than the one time it played in Fayetteville. You've had the LSU game, which for years, until the last, 4 years, I guess it's been, every other year, so it's only played twice or three times now in Fayetteville.
Which team are you talking about again?
LSU.
LSU. It was,
that game was always in Little Rock.
It was in 2012 was the first time.
Okay, so three times it's played. Okay, so my point is there's just been built-in schedule benchmarks where you weren't going to get around some of these things that caused some of these things to happen. Stop and think about it. The season ticket holders, the ones footing the bill, deserve better.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not getting their money's worth this year. And I think it was a great job by him yesterday to kind of recognize that and say, listen, we understand that your schedule is not real good. And we understand your frustration and your consideration to not keep your season tickets. You know, and you passed your pledge deadline here, which was back earlier in the month. You know, your renewal deadlines, and I'm sure that the foundation is still working with people that want to renew their tickets, or maybe you've had a change of heart. But I'm sure they're scrambling a little bit to fill in some of these seats that have went unsold at this point. But let's face it, the premium stuff, you know, between the 20s, lower bowl, there's not a lot of inventory there. So, I mean, it's not like people are in mass exodus, and it's not cheap to sit between the 40s, for sure. I mean, the donation level to sit there is extremely high. So a lot of those seats aren't coming available. Not that to say that there's none, but it's just hard to get those type of seats. But there's a lot of people that are sitting down at the 10-yard line that are thinking, is this worth it? People sitting in the upper deck, is this worth it? When I can go down and every time I'm walking to the gate to go to my ticket, up in 502, I can buy one for $20 on the sidewalk to sit in 102. Is this worth it? I get it. And that's the thing they're battling more than anything.
Yeah. And I think it was really, I don't say admirable, but it was just nice to hear Hunter Yurcheck say and recognize that, yeah, this home schedule is not good. He wasn't trying to sell you like, oh, Colorado State comes into town, and you know they beat Arkansas, so you got to really respect him as a great team. I mean, there was no selling it from that perspective. It was a selling point of, hey, yeah, I know it's bad, but it's going to get better here in the coming years. And I feel like, Tommy, with this new renovation that has happened to Donald W. Reynolds Razorback Stadium and just the current state of the program and how tough it is right now of just winning games and getting people in the stands, I feel like there is, if the winning doesn't come with it, and I mean high-level winning, I'm talking about winning that'll get 80,000 people into the seats at least once, maybe right. twice a year. I'm talking about that type of level. Then the university is going to have to get really creative and try to find new innovative ways to get people into the stands. Because last year, the most highly attended game was the Alabama game. Ticket scan said there was like 49,000, which you don't get a start on the ticket scan. Yeah. I still feel like there was more, but you know who knows. But it definitely was not full. It was about three quarters full at best.
Well, I agree. You know, but still, at the end of the day, financially, it is about tickets sold, not tickets
correct.
Scanned.
Correct. And that's what it comes. But you also don't want to have it to where when you're on television.
No,
you
have it's a bad look. Don't get me wrong. It's a bad look. But the money still goes into the bank account for every ticket sold.
It deposits. Yeah. You still get the check there. So it's a matter of if you're really serious about getting people into the stands and getting people to those games, and if you want to increase the tailgating atmosphere or whatever it is, you know, you may have to get creative with that if the success and the winning doesn't come at a high level. And I think that's also the task that they're having to battle, not just Arkansas, but everybody.
That was my next point. This isn't just an Arkansas-only problem, but winning cures all of this stuff. Winning is a great salve over these attendance problems at every university. But I'm telling you, why would anyone in their right mind go sit in the upper deck, top 10 rows, outside the 30s, when you can watch it on TV? I don't get it, but that's me. Maybe you want to be in the atmosphere, you want to be in the environment so bad you'll pay $60 to do that. I'm out. I'm not doing that. I'm not sitting upper deck on the ends. If you gave me the ticket and carried me up there.
And are you saying that just at any point in time or just right now we're at the current state of the program?
I don't care if Alabama played Notre Dame at Razorback Stadium. I'm not, if it's on TV, okay. I'm not sitting in that seat. Now, if I had a premium, I would much rather watch. I feel like I know more about the game itself. I'm more prepared to do this job watching it on TV. Now, there are certain elements. There are things that happen you don't see on TV. I get that. You're giving up some things. But if you're sitting up, just from a fan perspective, why would you, with every game on TV, that's the thing that every university, whether it's Florida, Alabama, Arkansas, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, it doesn't matter. When every game's on TV, the less than premium seats, I don't understand how you get them all sold. But that's me, because I would never pay to sit upper deck, upper rows, when I can watch it on TV. I couldn't enjoy the game from there, when I know I could be watching it in high def with a line of scrimmage view on every play.
So what do you do?
That to me is always going to be and will continue to be the challenge.
So how do you fix that? How do you get to where that person up there and that is having a good enough experience to be able to actually do that instead of watching it at home?
To me, and they have done some of this after the fact, why is the seat in 503, and I know the donations are different, but why is the face values, and they've worked on some of this. It has changed over time. But the face value in 503 and 103, to me, shouldn't be equal. Now, for years, it's been that way. Now, I think they've done some things. They've done some family packs. They do this a lot in basketball where they'll do upper deck family packs and make them cheaper. But it's usually after the fact. It's after the season ticket sales. It's after it's when they're basically hat in hand trying to do three-game mini packs and all of these things to get something sold. Why from the get-go right now when you're trying to sell season tickets, don't you make it easy for the family to afford four season tickets in some of these less desirable seats that you're struggling to sell? That's the, you know, and I don't know that that wouldn't be enough to lure me in, but it might be for others that want to take their kids and experience that. I don't know. To me, television, they when they made the deal with the devil, and I get it, and it's a good deal.
It's a great
deal for the conference. It's a great deal for the schools.
And it's a great deal for those who can't go to the game.
And I don't fault anyone responsible, from Mike Slive to the presidents and ADs that were in charge at that moment and the ones that are there now, for continuing the deal. I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful deal financially. But it's always going to be the battle that I think slowly eats away and erodes the programs that that aren't Alabama, essentially. Yep. It's just going to be tough.
Yeah. And that's why it's like there's not like one solution that you can just point to and fix it all. There's just not one thing other than winning.
And let me tell you, when Alabama quits, when Saban is done in 25 years, and they're done winning like a title 2 out of 3 years, because that's pretty much what they're doing, their stadium won't fill up either.
No.
They have overbuilt, but you know what? They built for now, and they're filling it up for now, and they're cashing in for now.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to fill your stadium is to win like 9, 10, 11 every year. Well, Arkansas's not winning 9, 10, 11 every year.
Nope.
Not going to.
Nope. And anybody that needs an example, just look at when Arkansas under Bobby Petrino had it rolling. I mean, all those home games. I mean, I know that there were some times where it had some empty corners and whatnot, but for the most part, it was pretty much sold out.
And TV's going. The TV experience is going to do nothing but get better. Because 4K's coming.
I was
going
to say, you got a chance to see 4K this couple weekends ago, right?
8K. 8K TV. I was at that National Association of Broadcasters show in Vegas. Now, it's going to be a long time before 8K broadcasts are available. 4K TVs have been out, what, 5 years now? 4 or 5 years?
Roughly.
You could buy them, but they're still very limited 4K
programming
and content, but it's coming. I mean, Super Bowl and big NFL games, some of the bigger college playoff games at the end of the year are done in 4K. We're going to see more. It wouldn't surprise me if in the next year or two, if it's not already in the works for CBS or one of the games on ESPN each week will be broadcast in 4K in the SEC, something along those lines. I mean, more and more 4K is coming. Just, it's inevitable. So that's another reason to stay home and watch it on TV. I'm telling you, it's just going to slowly erode and make it tougher and tougher. So what do you have to do? You got to kiss the fans' butts.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got to overserve.
Yep.
And I don't think it's about price. You don't have to cut ticket prices in half or anything like that. But you better make it less frustrating. You better make it more appealing. You better make concessions maybe
affordable.
More affordable. Lines easier to navigate. Order from your phone with some kind of app or, you know, again, people enjoy service. They don't want to miss the game. You better have monitors and screens where you can keep up with the game.
Wi-Fi.
Exactly. You better make the in-stadium experience less frustrating. Because that's one of the reasons I don't enjoy going as much as I used to. A, the TV experience at home is better. I can watch all the games around the league and around the country. And I don't have to deal with the traffic. I don't have to deal with the security guards or the parking lot attendants and the people that are rude to you half the time. I don't have to deal with the idiots that won't get out of the way in traffic. And I know the university can't control a lot of that. And they do a pretty good job of traffic flow, but there's just some things that can be overwhelming.
Yep.
And there's just some things that you've just got to want to be there in that environment.
Mm-hmm. Got to give motive. You got to give reasons. And maybe.
And then on top of that, you can't control the weather.
Yeah.
So if it's 48 degrees and raining, I can sit in that. And I can't bring an umbrella for obvious reasons. Or I can sit in my living room where it's 72 and dry. I mean, you just, things like that.
Yep. And I don't know if it's ever going to change, at least here in the coming years, or what they can do. But I do know that they're at least studying it. They're working at it. And it's just a matter of making those adjustments and trying to get more people to enjoy their games and in their seats at those high prices.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, the new beer of the summer with a refreshing strawberry lemonade twist. Natterdays, fun for every occasion.
They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house.
We've been discussing a few of the comments made by Hunter Yurecek yesterday on the show when he joined us. Had some interesting thoughts and opinions. Where the main one we were talking about was, of course, the Razorback Stadium and just the football season in general, season tickets and fans and their approach to the whole season and their approach to the football team just in general right now. But another question that we asked him that I thought was really fascinating when he brought up the misconceptions of a coaching search. Because during this coaching search that Hunter Yurchek went through for Eric Musselman, who he ended up with. There was a lot of names that got thrown around. We were all very interested in how Hunter Yurchek was going to handle it. But there's also a lot of quote-unquote fake news that gets thrown around a lot during some of these searches. And here's what Hunter Yurchek had to say about those misconceptions.
You know, I think it's really who is and who is not kind of a candidate or a person that we're truly interested in. I think there's just because of social media now, there's a lot of people that take guesses that are most of the time outside of the media and take guesses on what's going on, try to act like they're in the know. And I think that's probably the common misconception is who actually was a candidate, who actually did we talk to, and how this process unfolded.
I think it's fascinating because he says people mainly outside of the media taking names out there. And it is funny how the power of social media can have this, because I feel like there was a few media members, not all of them, but a few of them that it would really get traction going, whether it was on a message board or whether it was on social media or whatnot, where her name gets thrown out there and it starts rolling. And I'd be just curious to know what names were thrown out there that people, like even us here on the show, discussed in depth because we thought that it was a realistic option, an option that they were really looking at, but ended up being a name that they didn't even contact or didn't have any indication of showing any interest in that person either.
One of the, I don't remember if it was Goodman or if it was, but they went back over some of Arkansas's search, and Arkansas had apparently, you know, and he's not going to reveal who he interviewed and who he didn't, and nor should he. It would be unprofessional. But they went to Iowa. I believe they went to Iowa City to talk to Steve Forbes.
Right.
And people thought that was McCaffrey because
They thought Iowa,
but actually Steve Forbes was there. They'd had a death in the family, and they had went there and they had arranged a time, and this was reported out there, and that's what threw some people off. And I think probably McCaffrey's name got thrown into the mix and was never in the mix. Would be one thing that I've read that makes sense as to why you would think that he was actually a candidate, never was, when it's actually Steve Forbes was one of the guys they were talking to.
Yeah, I could see that being thrown around too, because the names that were really hot and heavy was Kelvin Sampson.
Obviously,
that was the first and foremost one that got thrown out.
You think if we'd ask him, hey, what really happened with Kelvin Sampson? Was he actually a candidate? What? I don't know that he'd have touched that question. Thought about asking it, but I mean, it just puts him in a spot to really give you no answer,
right.
And it's not professional for him to go into details of actual people with the search.
Yeah.
I assume that's bad etiquette. I mean, I can't imagine an AD going into details like that, but
no, but
the actual people.
But you could tell, though, when it was both sides of it, when you had the Houston media reporting really heavily on it,
right.
Arkansas media, it's kind of like if both sides are on that
right.
same fence.
I can't imagine Kelvin Sampson was not a candidate.
Yeah. I just can't see any way. Reese didn't get it.
That's what really gave people
serious talking to.
I mean, because I asked him, you know, was this a defining moment for you? Because we talked about this after the press conference where he introduced Musselman. I declared he became the AD today. And he was just kind of a up there guy. You know, no one really knew much about Hunter Yurchek. Who is this guy? Got a weird last name. How do you spell it? You know, don't know anything. Couldn't pick him out. I mean, if you just ran into him in Walmart, would you know who he is? I don't think most Razorback fans would for the first 16, 17 months on the job. This was a defining moment for him as the AD at Arkansas. He didn't think it was much of a defining or a defining moment. He thought it was a big hire, but he hoped there was bigger defining moments ahead of him here at Arkansas. I thought it was the moment in time he truly became, to say the people's AD, but I think the fan base, this is our AD. I think people embraced Hunter Yurchek after this process.
Well, let me ask you, do you feel like you felt the same way or people felt the same way when Jeff Long hired Bobby Petrino?
Absolutely.
Because it was such a big-time first hire?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Not only that Musselman's that kind of big-time hire, but
everyone was on board with it.
Everybody after the Kelvin Sampson thing had come unraveled and everybody was so certain he was your next head coach. People were, we were getting calls here on the show that, you know, social media, you know how, everybody knows how it was.
Oh, yeah.
You know, describing the coaching search as, hey, we got clown shoes on down here. What is going on? And let's face it, everybody thought you're going to end up with a worse coach than you had with
Mike Anderson.
Everybody had resigned themselves to that fact. And Hunter Yurchek delivered.
Yep. Because I even remember when the search looked like it was taking a terrible turn.
Because we had spent two shows talking about Eric Musselman and how he was a legitimate candidate and looked like a highly likely candidate when Kelvin Sampson fell out of the likelihood to become the next head coach. And then that went quiet for, what, a week? And we're like, what is going on here?
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that when it looked like it was taking a turn towards the worst, where it looked like that the guys that you had thought you had, or at least guys you thought were interested, were turning you down, you were going to end up with Steve Alford or somebody like that, when it just literally looked dark. The one thing that I kept saying, though, and it's almost like in a positive light, is saying, okay, well, just wait until it actually happens before you start freaking out. Wait until the hire is actually made and then give your reaction, because there's so much that we do not know. We think we have an idea. We think that we have our thumb on the whole pulse of what this coaching search was about. And I think to an extent, some of us did, or at least some of us had an idea of who they were going after. But when it came down to it, we don't know what goes on behind closed doors and the type of conversations that were being had. And Eric Musselman was a guy that when it was announced he was hired, we even put a poll question out, which I know is not the know-all, end-all, be-all indicator, but we put a poll question out there on social media here on the show of, do you approve of Eric Musselman being hired as the next head coach? And it was like the most lopsided poll question we've ever had, where it was like 97%, where we had over 2,000 votes, said, yes, this is a great hire. So, you know, it wasn't necessarily about the process and how that defined Hunter Yurchek. It was about delivering the result.
Right.
And that's what it came down to. Who cares about how it goes? Who cares about how stupid and how fruity and how loopy it gets? It's all about that end result.
Do you think it was the defining moment for Hunter Yurchek?
See,
to this point.
To this point, yes, because anytime a coach has, or an AD has to come in and make a big time hire at one of the big time revenue generating programs. Yeah, because there's
obviously the biggest thing he's done since he's been here.
Right, without a doubt. And I think that's how a lot of people see it, is like, all right, show us what you got. Heck, are you going to, by making this hire, it's going to, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but it's going to make or break how fans are going to view you as if we have to hire a new football coach whatever.
He's worked in the background doing AD stuff that most fans relatively don't care about or pay much attention to. I'm not saying they're not important. He finished up the North End Zone project. That Jeff Long had gotten started. There's been a lot of other facility stuff with baseball that he's gotten off the ground. He's been a lot of important stuff go on that have a lot of importance to the future of the athletic department. But this is the most visible. My point that I was trying to make, and maybe I'm just not putting the right words with it, I think this is where the fan base really embraced him publicly, and he publicly became the people's AD.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, he did a good job with it. I mean, because that's what it comes down to, is if he would have hired like Steve Alford, which I think by and large most Razorback fans would have hated that hire, then everyone would be still trash talking him, probably still calling in on the show absolutely. And being like, who is this joker that we got from Houston?
Absolutely.
I mean, so there was a lot of pressure on him to come through in his first big hire.
And then, as you've pointed out, his social media rollout of the announcement was fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, it was all done really
him
well.
Or the staff around him, whoever planned that out, credit to them for just an outstanding job with the videos and the pictures of the family and, letting everybody kind of know from the inside what was coming.
Yeah. And here's another thing, too, just because you think about it this way in the next few years, assuming the Hunter Yurchek's still the AD. And I'm not saying that this is going to happen, but just say they had to find a new football coach. Say if Chad Morris didn't work out, they have to find a new football coach. I mean, do you have confidence that Hunter Yurchek would be able to go out and allure a solid coach that would be good? I mean, I at least have. I'm not saying you'd go out and get some national championship Jimbo Fisher type coach, but I mean, you feel confident that he would be able to make a good hire.
But let's also be realistic about what has happened at Arkansas in the last two big hires. You've hired a coach from SMU and a coach from Nevada.
That's right.
To come to the SEC and make a whole lot more money.
Yep.
That's not the greatest accomplishment ever in the world of athletic directors.
No, and I agree with you. But on the other
side. And Chad Morris was done when Hunter Yurchek arrived.
But it's not his deal. You got to keep pointing back to on the other side of the coin, though. You also brought in a Big Ten coach in Brett Bielema who had a lot of success, too.
Because that track didn't work out either.
Right.
I'm not saying that this is the wrong path they're on. I'm just saying there are certain hires that are easier to get done. from a financial standpoint, right, where, you know, coaches at the end of the day have to make good business decisions for themselves.
Correct.
And there's certain coaches at certain levels of the sport that can't resist what Arkansas is going to have to offer.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, the new beer of the summer.
You can't really figure out this game and why Arkansas has even been close in some of these games, for one, or two, why Arkansas has not beaten Texas A&M since 2011.
And you could kind of understand it when they had Johnny Manziel, but they haven't had Johnny Manziel all these years, obviously.
Since 2013.
Right. So there's been plenty of chances, plenty of opportunities, and Arkansas has beaten Arkansas in several of these chances. You get the feeling, well, you better hurry up and get it done before Jimbo maybe gets this program really rolling here. The recruiting was, depending on the service you looked at, top three in just about every service. One of the best in the league, and you feel like great things are on the horizon unless the Aggie way becomes the Aggie way. But, I mean, nonetheless, they're going to be a tough out in the future. So if you're going to find a way to beat the Aggies, you better get it done quickly. So you got that angle for this year. You know, and then you got, you know, the Nick Starkel angle. You've got Chad Morris being an alumni. You got a lot of things going on with it, with this A&M series, particularly in this particular year or next year or two with Starkel, that I think make it intriguing.
Yeah, and if
Jimbo there, I mean, all this stuff.
I mean, there's a lot of intrigue in it, and you mentioned, you know, Starkel, say, what if he, you know, ended up starting or whatever for that A&M game? You also got the Rakeem Boyd, who was there too. Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of connections here between these two teams, and that's what's crazy is Arkansas football has not been great over the past 5-6 years. I mean, the best year, I guess, would probably be the 2015 season where they finished 8-5 that year, 7-5 regular season, when 5-3 in conference. That's been the best year they've had since 2011. And every single year that Arkansas has played A&M, the game has been close. Like, A&M has been a better program than Arkansas over the past 5-6 years. They have been.
They've recruited better. They have probably underachieved based on what they've recruited, though.
Yeah, when Kevin Sumlin was there, he had a 5-star quarterback every single year. You couldn't keep him around for more than a year.
That's right.
I mean, Kyler Murray started his career there, and we saw what happened to him at Oklahoma. But they have always had great players and great recruiting. And now with Jimbo being there after last season, where they finished going 9-4. On the year, and it's just a matter of, can this be the year? Can this finally be the year that Arkansas beats Texas A&M? Because here's the thing, we feel like Arkansas is going to be improved from last year. It's hard to be worse. But we feel like they're going to be an improved team. How much they're improved is what's going to be left up for debate, but an improved team nonetheless. I feel like there's no question, though, that Texas A&M is probably going to be an improved team as well. Yeah. At least that's what you would go along with, since they recruited so well. They have Kellen Mond back, who was one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC last year, at least one of the top three, and he's returning this year. They have a lot of offensive firepower, and it's just, I don't really know what to take from this game, because last year Arkansas had no reason even being close in that game, and if it wasn't for the kickoff return for a touchdown the very first play of the game, who knows what could have happened in that game. But it just seems like no matter what, no matter how good A&M is, no matter how bad Arkansas is, or vice versa, this game is always going to be a close one.
Yeah. But who's going to be worse? I mean, that's the thing. You know, they're going to be improved. Arkansas is going to be improved. Well, who's not going to be improved? Tell me who's taking a step back this year.
Is it just the SEC or who? I mean,
Kentucky, maybe?
I'd say Kentucky. I personally think that, I mean, I know I'm going to get hit for this. I think Alabama's going to take a step back. Means that they're only going to win 11 games instead of 12. But,
all right,
you know, so I think that, and I think Auburn could be one of those teams. I know they went 7-5 last year, but maybe not a step back, but they won't take a step forward. You know, so I mean,
my point is, everybody thinks most programs are improving. So you got to, I mean, obviously Arkansas has to improve, but
yeah.
I mean, the idea that, well, that program's improving. I mean, everybody thinks everybody's improving.
No, which I get. I'm just basing it off of, you have Jimbo Fisher in year one, who did people would even say he overachieved in year one, because people didn't think that he would at least get to that 9-win mark. He's returning the quarterback, which is, you know, the biggest part of it, and the biggest part of a team is returning a really quality quarterback, and their schedule lightens up just a little bit this year.
But I mean, you keep having number one, number two, number three, and depending on which one, but then top three recruiting class, and they've put several of these together. And like I said, Sumlin had really good. They got talent. At some point, you just get out of your own way and the talent takes over. And it still comes down to, can you beat Alabama? I mean, that's the roadmap to really achieving what they're proclaiming down there, which is a national championship in College Station. I don't know if they'll ever get to that, but they're going to do what Arkansas is trying to do, which is win more than 10 games. And I think at A&M, I think it can be consistently done. 9-plus can be consistent. 10-plus, I think, mm-hmm. can be consistent. They could take the LSU or Auburn spot in this division, meaning it could be Alabama, then A&M, then LSU or Auburn. I think Jimbo's that good a coach to get that done. As long as Jimbo's there, they could be the number two team in this division.
Which I would agree with you. But is it wrong of me to have this feeling of classic Texas A&M, where it's just, for whatever reason, they're always going to be kept back from being that team?
That's reasonable.
And because I don't know why it is. I don't know why it's that way. And it's not just like, oh, it's been a few years here and there or a coach here and there. It's truly been since the beginning of time that A&M has always been, even though they should be better than what they are, there's no reason why Texas A&M football should not be amazing. There's no reason for it.
I mean, recruiting rankings aren't the end-all, be-all, but you just keep getting good. You just keep getting good kids to come play for you. At some point, you're going to win 11 or 12 ball games.
You would think. I mean, because what have we talked about with all the recruiting rankings of the national champions, or at least teams that play in the national championship year in and year out? They're usually top five, or at least top 10.
And again, I'm not saying they're going to surpass Alabama and become the team of the West.
No.
I just think they can be even with or move past what I believe is Auburn and LSU are like 2A and 2B in this division right now. And I know Auburn went 7-5 last year, but they're kind of the number two team in the division, and so is LSU. But I believe Jimbo's a better coach than Malzahn or Orgeron, or to believe on Orgeron. But
yeah.
But those are, I think A&M can get in that mix. They're not there yet.
No.
I'm not putting them there yet. I just think he can get them there quickly.
But do you agree with me, though, that Texas A&M's
always done A&M things? I'm amazed how we've talked about baseball. You know how many good baseball players high school baseball players are in the state of Texas?
A few.
I mean, they need like 3 Valero cards to do the recruiting. That's it. They need like $90 in gas to get all the 5 stars they want. That's it. You know? So, how they're not better at everything just because of where they recruit from. Look at it, where they're at on the map. They're like in the perfect location. And they're the only SEC school in that state? Are you kidding me?
And I think they have money. Ungodly amount of money.
So, I mean, yeah. And now they got a coach that can back it. I just think there's a lot of good stuff on the way there.
And my feeling on it, too, is that if Jimbo Fisher can't get it done, if he can't get A&M to that level, no one will. No one can. And there's going to be truly something wrong with A&M. Like you mentioned all of it. Like the recruiting, the money, the facilities, everything that goes along with it. There's no reason why Texas A&M can't be the team contending for the SEC West title every year. There's no reason for it. But if they don't get it, then it just makes you wonder why. What is it about Texas A&M that keeps them from taking that next step? Keeps them from being highly nationally competitive? I don't know.
So you're sitting here and we're having this conversation. I don't think there's a lot of people disagreeing with what we're saying. It's Bama, and then you got these other three teams, A&M mm-hmm. trying to join the... Could you really argue that it's LSU and Auburn 2 and 3?
I think a distant 2 and 3, but...
Yeah, I mean...
Yes.
But that's the pecking order in the West, right?
Yeah.
Alabama, then, depending on your perspective, it's LSU-Auburn.
Yes.
And then it's A&M. And I think A&M can crawl into that conversation pretty quickly. That's the top. So... If you're Arkansas, Ole Miss, and Mississippi State, and I think Mississippi State here lately has been the better of those three, and Arkansas has clearly been the third of those two. Oh. I mean, you can have your flashes, you can have your season, maybe your back-to-back seasons like 10 and 11, but man, it just tells you how steep the battle is, at least right now in this window in the SEC.
Well, what you're hoping for, if you're Arkansas, and this is what really your hope goes into, is you're hoping that Chad Morris when he continues to build, when he continues to get his culture, and when he continues to recruit at the high level that he's at, that his coaching ability will be able to kick in and will be better than someone like Ed Orgeron or somebody better than Gus Malzahn or whoever the Auburn coach ends up being. Because we know that those teams and those programs, they're better. They're a better football program. LSU and Auburn, I think, and that's really the two teams that you can look at, because Alabama's just so far and away from everybody else, it's even hard to even look at them the same way. But could Arkansas, and I'm asking this honestly, could Arkansas, if Chad Morris ends up being a great coach, can they surpass LSU and Auburn? Can Chad Morris have a better program and be a better coach than Ed Orgeron at LSU? Can he do that? Can he be better than what Auburn has if it's Malzahn or if it ends up being somebody else? Can Arkansas
be
that?
5 out of 5 years?
4 out of 5, 5 out of 5. I mean, just being the program when we go through the spectrum of the SEC West, we're like, okay, where's everybody at? Can Arkansas end up being better than LSU? Because you know what? Chad Morris is better than Ed Orgeron.
Can we be honest or make you feel good?
Well, be honest about it. That's why I'm asking. Asking honestly.
I don't think anything to do with Chad Morris. I mean, if he's going to do that, it's because he gets a ton of great kids out of Texas. That's the only way you're going to do it. Because the geography in Arkansas when it comes to football just doesn't, unless things like drastically change and like the genetic lottery changes in Arkansas and you just have like Bobby Petrino had, where there was just a ton of great football players out of Warren and Central Arkansas, and there's another Joe Adams and another Tyler Wilson and another Jarius Wright and another Greg Childs and another...
Get a Ryan Mallett to transfer in?
You know, all of these things come your way. You just don't have the recruiting geography here. Now, so the only way around it is go to Texas and get 15 kids a year that are 4 stars. And, I don't know if you can consistently do that, yeah. But that's the only way.
And since we've been talking about Texas.
And let me tell you this. And if Arkansas does that 4 out of 5 years and beats LSU for it, Orgeron won't be the coach there.
No. No, it won't happen at all. But let me ask you this, too, and we can end on this one. If Texas A&M and Jimbo Fisher, say if Jimbo Fisher leaves, which I still think he's going to end up leaving at some point. Jimbo Fisher leaves or whatever. Is that really what's going to be the fact of why you think Arkansas can't surpass Texas A&M is because of Jimbo Fisher, or is it more because of Texas A&M? Like, do you think Arkansas can be a better program than what A&M is? Is it or not? And if it's not, is it because of Jimbo, or is it because the program of Texas A&M is just destined to be better?
Why do we hold A&M? Why are we even having this conversation about A&M right now? It's because we believe Jimbo Fisher is the guy that can get the job done.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.